Good afternoon. Today, I want to deliver a message titled, It Is I, and Do Not Be Afraid. It Is I, Do Not Be Afraid. John chapter 6 is a magnificent chapter. It carries, I think, one of the most significant miracles that Jesus performed, which was to feed 5,000 men, and that's about 20,000 people. If you could just picture 20,000 people fed by a lunch bag, okay? And you have to picture this. When was the last time you've been around 20,000 people? What would that be? If you were to fill Madison Square Garden, I'm not sure exactly how many, what the capacity of that building is. Let's say about 20,000 people. Okay, picture that, and 20,000 people following Jesus. Why were they following Jesus? If you could just begin to listen to this important question. Why were people following Jesus? Because of miracles and spectaculars. Okay, there are about 60 miracles recorded in the Gospels. But Jesus did not perform 60 limited miracles. He performed 60,000 miracles. Okay, everywhere he go, there were miracles and supernaturals because he's divine. Okay, and it is recorded in John chapter 20. John put it this way: if I were to record everything that Jesus has performed, even the whole world will not be enough space to record everything. Do you hear it? Now, we talked about this last week, and we talked about this week before that. These miracles or supernaturals are a witness, an evidence of who Jesus is. Okay? No one else. Who feed 5,000, 20,000 people with a one Chick-fil-A lunch pack? Right? Who creates that amount of massive food out of nothing? That's we call creation, something that we human beings cannot do nor capable of. Okay? So he heals, he casts out demons, and he walks on water today. Two most significant miracles are recorded back to back in John chapter 6. But what I want to address, draw your attention is, there were about 20,000 people following him. And at the end of the chapter, how many people followed him? 12. In John chapter 6, verse 66, they all left him. Isn't it kind of interesting? You would think if you see spectaculars and miracles, you would have easy time following Jesus and believing Jesus. Don't you reason like that? If someone rise from the dead, I mean, everyone's going to be believing. If someone's cancer is cured, everyone would have no problem believing. But not so the case. You know, this is an interesting chapter because it carries the most spectacular miracles of Jesus' life. And yet, I think where the chapter is going is from 20,000 followers, crowds, or spectators seeking Jesus to 12 true disciples. And I don't want to sound cynical. I don't want to sound depressing. I'm not. Okay? But that's what we see in this chapter. We talked about Jesus feeding 5,000 people, and the miracles of Jesus is historical. Okay? It's not a myth. It's not like a fairy tale. It's historical. It was right before the Passover, which gives the illusion of the desert and God feeding Israelites in the desert for 40 years. Supernatural. Is there a supernatural? You know? Today we'll be looking at a story, which is very, very simple story of Jesus walking on water as the disciples were going through the storms. Okay? Now, Can you just imagine? It's in the middle of the night, sort of like 3 or 4 in the morning, okay? And the waves are really, really big, and the wind is strong against you, and there is someone walking towards you on water. And it's a historical event. And if you look at the story carefully, which is recorded in Matthew, Mark, and John, and we're going to look at all three of them briefly so that we pick up things that we need to pick up. And what happened was, what I see is, what is highlighted is not nothing else. It's what is highlighted is transcendent holiness of God, holiness of Jesus. Okay, transcendent, which means beyond time, beyond space. He's different. You know, we human beings long to meet God. You may be thinking, oh no, I'm not. You do, okay? Like a fish long to be in water, okay? Like fish long to be in water. Like bird desire to fly. We human beings deep inside, we long to be with our Creator and be safe. Or else you fear. Do you fear today? Can I just ask you, do you fear? What do you fear? Okay. Today, the topic is, it is I, ego e me, which I'll explain, and do not be afraid. We long to be with the Creator. At the same time, there's a different kind of side to it, and we fear Him, and we avoid Him at the same time. That's our deep sin nature. The way we created, we long to be with God. We all do. In fact, you all know. You may not cognitively acknowledge the fact that there's going to be eternity and you are created to live eternally. But deep inside in your soul, you do. You do. Like a fish long to be in the water. Okay? So, in this incredible story of feeding of 5,000 and Jesus walk on water, and they go together in Matthew, in Mark, and in John. There's got to be a reason, right? Don't you think? And what I am proposing is, it started with 20,000 people following Jesus, like right now. So many people seek Jesus for some reason. Okay, what are the reason? Okay, and then it just comes down to, after the miracles, you would think, there should be more people. There should be more people get excited. People should want to know more about Jesus, but they don't. They all walked away and stopped following Jesus. We had a Bible study last Friday, and just a couple days ago, and I was just asking people, is that the case? Your peers and your friends, do people follow Christ or do they walk away? Okay? And it was a small number of people, and maybe 6-7 people. We're all saying it without a doubt. Most people walk away. Most of my friends walked away. Okay? So, that as an introduction, I want to go to the text, and it's in the chapter of I Am the Bread of Life, where Jesus said, using that name of God, I Am, 7 times in John's Gospel, he declared that I am Jehovah Yahweh. He is Yahweh. 7 times. I am the bread of life, chapter 6. I am the light of the world, chapter 8 and 9. I am the door of the sheep, chapter 10. I am the good shepherd, chapter 10. I am the resurrection and the life, chapter 11. I am the way and the truth and the life, chapter 14. And I am the true vine in chapter 15. 7 times he declared that, ego e me, using the name of God, Jehovah, and declared that I am God, okay? And he is, not only his teachings, but his miracles and his everything supports that. And yet, people have trouble believing him. I don't know whether you believe, okay? I'm not being skeptical here, okay? But 20,000 out of 12, 12 out of 20,000 sounds pretty staggering to me. Staggering to me. Okay, so it's John chapter 6. After that incredible miracle of feeding 20,000 people, what do people wanted to do? They wanted to forcefully make Jesus the king. Why? I think convenience. He feeds, he heals, and it'll be nice. And Jesus said, you sought after me not because of the true meaning of those signs, but you seek after me because of the food, the loaves that you have eaten, your physical things. You know, I think nothing changes in human nature and human history. People still seek that prosperity, little miracles, and you would think, oh, that will help people. Not according to Jesus. I'm going to share in a minute, okay? Let me read. So what did Jesus do? Jesus, if he becomes the king, that means there is no cross. If there is no cross, there is no Christianity. There is no atonement. There's nothing. So he can't do that. So he dismissed the people, 20,000 people. And while he's doing that, he sent disciples into the boat. It was late in the evening, getting late, and let them cross the lake. That's what this story is about. Verse 16, when evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, okay, while Jesus was dismissing the people. And they got into a boat and started across the Sea of Capernaum. It was now dark. Okay, it was getting dark, and Jesus pushed them into the lake. It's kind of peculiar. Jesus had not yet come to them, which means he's not in the boat, okay? And yet Jesus sent them. And the sea became rough because of a strong wind was blowing. And when they had rowed about 3 to 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on sea and coming near the boat. And they were frightened, terrified, astoundingly terrified. It does not say they were terrified by the storm. It does not say that. These are professional fishermen. At least 6 of them, perhaps 7 of them, 12 disciples were former professional fishermen all their lives. And they are used to rowing at night. And they are used to small storms here and there. And they already experienced Jesus calming the storm when Jesus was in the stern of the boat. So they went through all of that. But this time, the fear is not about the storm, but it is about the person. Okay? I think this is a very intentional, related to 5,000, feeding of the 5,000 story, and Jesus was walking on water, and who could do that? Who could go against the law of the nature? Who could possibly go against the law of the nature of gravity and walk on water in the storm? Who could possibly do that? Can you even imagine that? They were probably exhausted from previous day's ministry. Now they've been rowing in the dark at night. Wind was against them for 7-8 hours. It was late into the night, and there's Jesus walking on water. Who could do that? You know, when you see God in the Bible, people were terrified. Okay. Remember Moses? Remember Isaiah? Do you remember Peter? When they see God, people are terrified. You know why? Because he's holy, transcendent God. Beyond time, beyond space, beyond nature, beyond law of the nature, beyond our physical way of thinking. He is holy, which means separate, which is different, which transcendent. And that's the God that we are talking about, and Jesus walks on water to demonstrate that. Okay? So it's a very small, short story, and there's not much to it. And what is highlighted is the fact that he just reveals himself as a transcendent God here. So Jesus walks on sea and coming near the boat, and they were frightened. And verse 20, but he said to them, it is I. It's me, Jesus. It's the Jesus you know. But it's more than that. Okay? It is I, ego eimi, and do not be afraid. Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. So there's not much to it, okay? But this story, okay, I picked this picture. There are like hundreds of pictures in Google, and I try to picture not too spooky one. Yeah. I don't know. This was the best I could do, Okay, forgive me, right? They were rowing the boat, and Jesus walks on water, and they thought he was a ghost, a phantom, okay? And they are terrified, okay? And this same story is in Matthew Gospel, okay, and Mark Gospel. And briefly, I'm going to just read through because I think it's worth have a quick study so that we could pick up what we need to pick up here. Matthew chapter 14, immediately he made disciples get into the boat. Who did? Jesus did. Okay? And go before him to the other side of lake where he dismissed the crowd. So sort of like Jesus rushed them into the boat. Did he know the storm was coming? Perhaps, right? And after he had dismissed the crowd, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. So they were clearly separated. He's in the mountain and the disciples were in the lake or the sea. And when evening came, he was there alone, highlighted like that. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, and wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, which is about 3-4 in the morning, it's like late deep into the night. Okay, why didn't Jesus save them quickly? I don't know. His sovereign timing, right? His sovereign timing. In the fourth watch of the night, he come to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost, it's a phantom." And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus reveals himself to them. "Take heart, it is I, ego eimi, and do not be afraid." And Peter answered him. There's a story of Peter walking on water, which is very different, but it's not the point of today's message, but we're going to read it anyway. Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on water and came to Jesus. But when Peter saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried out, "Lord, save me." And Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And they got into the boat. They got into the boat and wind ceased. And those in the boats worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God," or God. Okay, that's Matthew's story. Mark's story is a little shorter, but there are interesting things we need to pick up. Mark chapter 6. Immediately, he made his disciples get into the boat. He made them get into the boat where the storm was waiting and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up under the mountain to pray. Very similar to Matthew's story. And when evening came, the boat was out in the sea, and he was up in the mountain, right? Supposedly, alone on the land. And then verse 48 says, Jesus saw. So what? That they were making headway painfully. They were in the storm, and Jesus saw that. Wow. Supernatural power of God, right? For the wind was against them. He knew, he saw, and he heard that wind was against the disciples in the middle of the sea. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them. Walking on sea, he meant to pass by them. Always Jesus, I don't know, he does that time to time. Okay. Verse 49, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost. And they cried out, for they all saw Jesus was walking on the water and were terrified. Okay, terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I, ego eimi, do not be afraid." And he got into the boat with them and the wind ceased. And they were utterly astounded. And verse 52 is very important, if you could just look at this, which connects the story with the feeding of 5,000. They were terrified because they did not understand about the loaves. Okay? And their hearts were hardened. Okay. Quick survey of this simple story. Okay. What is this story of John chapter 6, Jesus walking on water about? Okay. What is this story about? What can we learn from this? I think the first thing that we could look at is the followers and the crowds were following Jesus, and there were a massive amount. So many people follow Jesus. So many people seek Jesus throughout history, even right now, even in this room. Correct? Right? Why? Because they did not understand the loaves, but they were seeking, not because they seek the true meaning of this feeding of 5,000, but you ate your fill of the loaves. In other words, you follow him because it's convenient. It helps you physically, temporally. But the point of this chapter is that's just not going to last. That's not true believing or true discipleship. I think that's the point of the story, which we see that Jesus didn't want that to happen, so he immediately sent the disciples into the storm. Who did that? Jesus did that. He rushed them into the boat where I think he knew the storm was coming. I think he knew. In other words, Jesus, beyond allowing, threw his disciples into the storms. It's not the first time. Probably not the last time. Okay? So, my brothers and sisters, in the sea of life, of your life, as you follow Jesus, I think as you sail through the sea of life, storms are inevitable. I know. It's not a very happy message, but I think it is, actually. See, when you just sail through the life, the storms are inevitable. And we know Galilee, geographically, is about 700 feet below sea level, surrounded by mountains. So the cool air from the southeast table and just rush in to displace the warm air of the moist of the lake and churning up the water into a violent storm. We know that. That's historically, geographically true. And sometimes storm comes when you are not expecting. Isn't that how it is with your life? Some of you may be in storm right now. I don't know. I know some of you are. Some of you acknowledge that. But what we are picking up today is Jesus knows, and he put you there. Okay, put you there. In this story, Jesus not only heals and casts out demons and just feed and multiply and creates, now his control over nature. He shows that by walking on water. Could you think with me? I know we heard this story so many times, but who could possibly do that? Who does that? Who walks on water, which is completely transcending, superseding the nature, law of nature? Only person who could do that is someone who is transcendent of nature. And that's God. And Bible continues to, especially in the Gospel of John, saying that, declaring that Jesus is God, people. But didn't crowds see that? Feeding of 5,000 and 20,000 people? And why did they walk away then? Because they did not understand the loaves, which is what follows after this miracle, which is the gospel. You know why people walk away? Because people cannot understand and take the gospel. Okay? I think that's how it is. Okay? People walk away because you hear the gospel. It's so interesting. You're hearing the gospel. Some people will receive it with humility as lifeline, as you should. And some people will say, I'm walking away. Okay? It's so interesting. It's like you want to be in the sea, in the water, like a fish, and at the same time you hate it. You know why? Because you love the darkness more than the light. Do you see the problem? Okay. You want that eternal rest because your heart is longing for it, don't you? What do you fear, people? What do you fear? Your health, your career, your children. What do you fear? You want that relationship with the Creator, God, transcendent God, and yet you hate it at the same time. That's our tragic condition of human art. Right? And this story of Jesus walking on water, I think it's a special one. But it happens to happen in the storm. Okay. Do you desire it? I know. That's a nasty question. Do you want that understanding of the gospel and true deep encounter with God? But it happens oftentimes in the storms. And perhaps that's why you are in a storm right now. And God is in sovereign control, people. Okay, it's not like you believe in Jesus, everything is happy and dandy, and you live happily ever after. That's not a Christian story. Okay? So, who could walk on water? Only divine supernatural deity. And he claims that. When he said, "Take heart, it is I." He's not just saying, "Oh, this Jesus you know." It's not saying that. He's declaring, using the term in original text, "ego eimi." 7 times in John's gospel, he declared and used the name of God of the Old Testament, of Exodus chapter 3, and he declared that, "I am Yahweh Jehovah." Okay? When you meet that God, you'll be terrified, people. And your heart and your life will be different. Then, perhaps, the gospel began to make sense. Okay? I want us to go to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3 is the very special chapter where Moses meeting God. And Moses at the time was in the Midianite desert. After killing Pharaoh's person, he grew up in palace. And yet God, you know, sent him to Midianite desert so that God could use him as the Old Testament Savior and Redeemer. But before that happens, for 40 years he was in the desert, Midianite desert. One day, God shows up in the mountain of Horeb. Okay? And this is after 40 years of desert. 40 years of storm, if you will. Okay? So, God calls Moses and to the bush. And there was a bush that was burning but not being consumed. Can you imagine that? That's supernatural. It's burning, but it is not being consumed. And God calls him, "Moses, Moses, yes, Lord, take off your shoes. The place where you're standing is a holy ground." When you stand before God, that's a holy ground, people. "Now, I have chosen you. I'm going to send you to my people in the Egypt because I saw them struggling. I hear their groaning. And I know about their sufferings of my people Israelites. And I'm going to send you." And what was the response of Moses? So interesting. "Who am I?" Isn't it interesting? When God said, "I am," and he asked, "Who am I?" I think one of the application is, you will never know who you are until you meet God who made you. Right? So who am I? Who am I? I'm nothing. I'm nothing. And then he goes, "I will be with you. I will be with you." And then this follows. Then Moses said to God, "If I go to the people of Israel and say to them, 'God of your fathers has sent me to you.'" Let's say I go to Egypt and tell Israelites, and God sent it to me to you, and they're going to ask me, "What is his name?" The name of God, right? "What shall I say to them?" And then God said to Moses, "I am who I am. Yahweh, ego eimi," he said, "and say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent to you. Okay? And that's the name of God. And the next verse, 15, says, God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel. The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, has sent me to you, and this is my name forever. Yahweh is my name forever. And thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Isn't it amazing? That's his name. Name of God. Holy, transcendent God. When he's saying that, you know what he's saying? He's basically saying, God is saying, I have no beginning. I have no end. I have no past. I have no future. I am eternal I am. I do not change. I am the creator like none other. I am transcendent, holy, eternal God. That's who Yahweh is. And Jesus saying, I am. Do not be afraid. It is me. There's a Greek translation of Hebrew Bible of Old Testament. If you go to chapter 3, verse 14, I am who I am is translated as ego eimi. So interesting, grammatically, ego means I. Okay, it's a predicate sentence, and eimi means I am. So I, predicate sentence, I am, which means I am, I am. Sounds awkward, but that's what Jesus said, ego eimi. I am, I am. It sounds like Jehovah right here. I am who I am. I am none like others. I walk on water. I feed 20,000 people. But that's just a little sign. It's so much bigger, people. Only the disciples experienced that. If you know, I just noticed only the disciples. Other crowd who are following, they had a hunch because it explains it. There was no boat crossing the lake, and disciples left without Jesus, and Jesus is not there, and Jesus was the disciples next day. So they kind of had the hunch, but they weren't in the storm. But through the storm, these disciples experienced holiness of God, people. What differentiates true disciples and, should I say, false disciples? I think meeting this transcendent God. If you seek after God for your convenience and your temporal need and things, according to Jesus, you will all walk away. Okay? I was watching this video of Rich Man and Lazarus, and I could send it to you if you want. And I was reminded, do you know that story in the Bible? Jesus talks about heaven and hell. Okay? Are you listening? Jesus talks about heaven and hell, which means it's true. And Rich Man, living in purple, really, really rich, enjoying his life. And then there was a poor man who was sick and living with sores. And they lived right next to each other. And I think Rich Man knew Lazarus. Story is simple. They both die. And Rich Man goes to hell. And the poor Lazarus, who suffered through this life, go to the bosom of Abraham. And this is Jesus' story about heaven and hell. And sort of like the main character of this story is the rich man, I think, in hell. And he talks a lot, okay? He sees, okay? He sees Abraham and Lazarus in the bosom of Abraham. He sees the paradise, and he's in hell. And he talks, Abraham, Abraham, Father Abraham, 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 I am so in agony and thirsty. Could you ask that Lazarus to dip his finger into a water, a cup of water, and cool my tongue. Just one drop of water. That's how thirsty he was. You know, it's interesting because in past Last 1 year, I heard this expression twice in reality. One from our Kwanzanim, who was in the hospital, who was supposed to be dying in 48 hours, and she couldn't even drink one drop of water. And I remember visiting her, just knowing, not knowing how long she's going to live. And she said, Pastor, I'm so thirsty. If someone could dip his finger into a cup of water and just cool my tongue, I think I would have been revived. I really felt like that last night. That was about 2 years ago. And then about 6 months ago, the lady who passed away, another female elder who passed away with cancer, I visited her at Sloan Kettering Hospital, and she said the exactly same thing. I'm so thirsty that if someone could just dip his finger and just touch my tongue, I think I would revive. So this rich man asked Abraham, can you do that? Just one drop of water? And Abraham said, you know what he said? He said, no, Abraham. There's a great chasm between you and me. No one can go and no one can come here. In other words, death is final. It's the doctrine of heaven and hell according to Jesus. And then, okay, then do this. Father Abraham, could you send Lazarus back to life? And tell my brothers, I have 5 brothers, and let them know about this reality of heaven and hell. Could you please do that? I don't know. I mean, you know, even in hell, I think there's a little bit of, I don't know, he had a good desire. Could you tell? And then Abraham, which really is Jesus saying, no, I can't. You think even a dead, if a dead person rise, people may believe? That is not the case. Jesus is saying, Abraham is saying, even if the dead person would rise, they will not believe. But they have Moses and the prophets, the Bible. I don't know whether you're hearing it. People seek after signs, spectaculars. You think people will believe? Perhaps it'll help a little bit. I don't know. I don't even know. But not according to Jesus. Even if a dead person rise from the dead, you're not going to believe if you don't believe in the Bible. I don't know whether you're hearing it. You do not understand the loaves, the gospel, because your heart is seeking after your stomach. Okay, I think that's what this story is about. Okay. And I think those of us who are in a storm, I've been it before. You have been in it before. And it may not be the last time. I think in the sea of life, as we cross the sea of life, storms are inevitable. In fact, it's God's design. Okay, but I want to encourage you, according to Mark's gospel, he sees you and he hears you. He sees the wave in front of you. He sees your headway pull is difficult. He's not just kind of like folding his arm and let's see how he does. He's not doing that. He's watching you. He hears you. And he knows. And he's ready to come. But he doesn't come too early. He wait until the fourth watch of the night. Late into the night. Until, I don't know, his sovereign timing. His sovereign timing, people. Why? Because I think through it all, perhaps through the storm, he reveals whom you're God is, your idols are. Right? I know it's a painful message. Okay. I think he reveals what your trust, where your trust is, what your idols are. He doesn't want you to be proud. He doesn't. Yeah. The truth of the matter is, I think when your eyes open, you realize there's nothing you can do on your own. There's nothing you can do. Okay, I think he wants to reveal that. And at the perfect sovereign time, he comes and he reveals himself. And he strengthens you by saying, Agoemi, I am, I am. My name is Jehovah. Don't be afraid. I came to seek and save what was lost. And I love you and I gave myself for you. So how does he rescue us and how does he save his disciples? He gets into the boat and then finally wind subsides. The doctrine of imminency. God is here. Emmanuel. And that's where our trust is, people. Okay? God is here. Imminency. Doctrine of imminency. Is he the captain of your boat? Is he the captain of your life? He wants to be the captain of your life. Everything subsides. There is no other lifeline. In this sea of life, there is no other lifeline, people. There is no way you could save yourself. There is no other lifeline. And he desired to save you. And he's saying, I want to be the captain of your life. Is he the captain of your life? I want to remind you, he is the Lord of the storms, people. He's the Lord of the storms. Okay? And his desire is not to crush and destroy and throw you away, but he is watching you. And he hears you. He hears your groaning. He hears your pain. He hears your sighing. He hears your agony, and he's ready to come, but he just wait for that perfect timing of his sovereignty, fourth watch of the night, and he wants to come. Why? Because he doesn't want you to be a spectator crowd, false disciples. He wants you to be true disciples of Jesus. Do you want riches and then be a false disciple? Or would you rather be stripped and be a true disciple of Jesus? Right? When I look at this story, it just kind of, like when I try to prepare messages like this, I have to deliver another hard message to young people, young Christians. But that's the Bible. Okay, that's the Bible. He's not interested in 20,000 crowd. He's interested in true followers of Christ who understand who Jesus is. Until you believe Jesus like that, you're not going to follow him. I promise you, you're going to walk away too. Can you look at the statistics? 20, and then there's 12. That's very small. And my question to you is, do you think we are doing better in 21st century than first century when Jesus was preaching and when Jesus performing miracles? Do you think we're doing better now? I don't know. I can't imagine that. But I want to just end with a really hopeful verse, which is also in chapter 6, which I'll be discussing next week or following week. No one can come to the Father, Jesus said, unless Father draws him. How does he draw him? Sometimes through the storms. If you're in a storm, perhaps you're in the right place right now. Okay? No one can come to the Father unless the Father draws him. No one can come to me unless it is granted by him, by the Father. You know how you could believe? When God grants you to believe. You don't choose. I don't think you choose. I mean, there's a sense in which we do. But in the bigger scheme of things, you don't choose unless God draws you and grants you. Even if 5,000 people are fed, you're not going to believe and you're not going to follow. And a lot of people didn't. And I think they're doing the same thing right now. And the one last verse, verse 39, it says, this is the will of God, that I should lose none of all that he has given me. You know what the promise is? Jesus is not going to lose any whom he has chosen. I think that gives me confidence. At the same time, seeking faith. Right? So brothers and sisters, my prayer is, just as Jesus' desire, that you will not be 20,000 crowd seeking for filling of your stomach, but you will be a lover and true fear of God, of holy God who loved me and gave himself for me. Let's pray.